from terrorism in Israel to terrorist groups in America, from Islam to radical Islam, the question of suffering in Judaism. We'll cover it all today on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I post on Facebook a couple of days ago that I'm going to be speaking at an Israel summit, just about packed out with pre-registration already, just in a couple of weeks in Colorado, speaking at an Israel summit. And I just checked back later and noticed that a lady named Linda responded to my post about an Israel summit, believers gathering together to talk about God's purposes for Israel. And she said this, Zionist ignoramus. Yep. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Got a special guest I'm really excited to bring on in a few minutes. 866-348-7884. If you missed yesterday's show, by all means, check it out. 2 hours with Kurt Eichenwald, the author of the controversial Newsweek cover story about the Bible at Christmas time. As you know, Newsweek printed my lengthy rebuttal to that. We spoke for 2 hours. I think you'll find it eye-opening and enlightening and perhaps a good model to use for how to approach those we differ with. You can listen by going to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, clicking on latest broadcast. Also, click on my latest article called Setting Anderson Cooper Straight. I think you'll find it very interesting and enlightening. Well, I decided, I don't see the vast majority of comments that are posted on Facebook or Twitter in response to my articles, but sometimes I'll see some, and every so often I'm able to engage, or I feel it's important to engage. So rather than just deleting the comment, because we don't allow personal attacks against me, I don't mind them, but we just don't want the Facebook page or Twitter feed or websites to be used for that. So rather than deleting it, I thought, well, let's have a little fun and respond. So I wrote back. I said, Linda, what a delightful comment. Obviously being a little sarcastic. Would you care to enlighten my Facebook community here as to why you believe I'm a Zionist ignoramus for believing that God keeps his promises? That's all I'm saying. I didn't write this on Facebook, but that's all I'm saying. That God made promises to Abraham, and then Isaac, and then Jacob, and the descendants of Israel, the physical descendants of Israel. He made promises, and he keeps his promises. And just like he deals with us based on grace, and he can discipline us, but he deals with us based on grace, he ultimately dealt with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob based on grace, and his promises to Israel remain based on grace, and Israel's failed, Israel suffered, and yet God still reaches out in his love. So I said, or were you, God forbid, calling the Lord himself a Zionist ignoramus? Please do let us know. So she wrote back a couple hours later, the Lord was not pro-war or prone to racism. Yeah. So when he called Israel to drive out the Canaanites and gave them the land, I guess there was a war in Joshua's day. And I guess when God makes a promise based on his grace, now it becomes racism. She said he was a true, the name of Jesus has been bastardized. He was a true humanitarian and would never sanction the aggressive, greedy actions of Israel or the USA. So I wrote back, so you don't believe what the Bible says about God restoring his people to the land? And you find a Christian to call another believer an ignoramus? Really? She says, we are all his people. And Jesus showed anger at times. Your bigoted remarks make me angry. Now remember, I had just posted an Israel announcement that I'm speaking at an Israel summit. Oh. Then she said, how did Christianity ever become so tainted? And then she posts a link to an article by Reza Aslan in his best-selling and yet miserably flawed book, The Zealot. And she said the historical Jesus was crucified for being a revolutionary. That was the title. At that point, we just blocked her because of the attacks. But yeah, and then someone else had even something worse to say. Zionism is evil of the devil. My guest joining us will tell us why the hostility towards Israel.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That Middle Eastern music reminds you that it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, blessed and delighted to be with you. For some years now, I have read with interest different posts, material, even a book by Bill Koenig. He began publishing Koenig's Watch, a weekly summary of important Middle East news from Dallas in May 1996, moved to the internet November 96, and it became Koenig International News, which includes World Watch Daily, the website watch.org. Yeah, I'm sure he had to secure that early on, watch.org. It's constantly updated, carries stories from a large variety of news sources, has readers and email subscribers in all 50 states and 105 countries. January 2001, he moved to the news moved the news service to the Washington, D.C. area and became a White House correspondent. February 2004, he authored Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel, revised and updated in July 2006. The book is now in its 22nd printing. There's much more I could tell you about my guest, but I'm delighted to bring to the Line of Fire for the first time, Bill Koenig. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be with you.
All right, sir, you are obviously not going out of business anytime soon with what is happening in the world, in the Middle East. Do any of the things happening, America's relationship with Israel, Israel and Iran, rising Islamic radicalism, are any of these things big surprises to you? Any of this catching you off guard?
No, Michael, not really. But I think the only thing that really has me and other friends of mine to keep an eye on this very, very closely is the speed in which things are happening. There is so many biblically significant events taking place at a very rapid pace, and I also say this frequently when I speak to audiences, is the fact that we have all major final day events in play, which is unprecedented. I'd say the last two or three years that's been the case, and up to that period of time, you know, you might have three or four that were important, they were crucial, that were in play. But today, everything is moving at an incredible pace, and the Jewish prophet spoke of a time like this, and I think we're honored and blessed to be living in the most important time of biblical history.
Yeah, I was speaking with editors at a Christian magazine a few days ago, and we were talking about end time events and these things. And I said, look, I'm not going to date set. I got saved 43 years ago and was told Jesus was coming at any minute then. I said, but things are in place now that have never been in place before. I mean, before 1948, things were not in place. Before 1967, things were not in place. So again, we don't know the time frame in terms of the return of the Lord, but we do know that things are in place that have never been in place before. Bill, the terrorist attack that took place earlier this week, the stabbing in Tel Aviv on a bus, and then the terrorist gets off the bus and just running after people to try to stab them. Some even that shown on a video. We posted that. In your mind, is this a lone wolf kind of thing, or is this just part of the larger issue of Islamic terrorism or anti-Israel hatred?
Well, it definitely is part of a larger issue. These are lone wolves. A lot of these guys are operating on their own. But just the whole mindset of radical Islam, I noticed Hamas was quick to, didn't take credit for the event, but said he was a heroic guy, as well as Fatah. Through the Palestinian Media Watch, they said they basically congratulated this guy as well. And, you know, just that mindset of knowing that someone that has has been misled by Islam, especially radical Islam, that can go out and do something like this. So, you know, they're basically being influenced by the teachings of Fatah and Hamas or even their position. So a nobody all of a sudden becomes a somebody within the Palestinian communities. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of this. And unfortunately, the last few months, it's been more of the knifing issues which is just a really heinous way, along with the suicide bombings of the past. It's just a horrible way of doing things.
Yeah, and in fact, when you hear words coming from Palestinian leaders basically saying everybody has a knife, you know, you have a kitchen, you have a knife that, that you could get involved, it's hard to not say that there's incitement. In fact, I'd like you to respond to an audio clip here. This is Israeli Ambassador Prosser. He is on CNN Tonight with Don Lemon. Clip number three. This was last night. I want you to hear what he has to say in the larger issue of knife intifada. Clip number three.
A spokesman for Hamas called the attack heroic retribution for the occupation of their lands. You say that this is more than a lone wolf attack. Explain.
You know, when we all look at this video, he stabbed 12 people, this terrorist. Mm-hmm. But really, the one that stabbed this those 12 innocent people was Palestinian incitement. They stabbed the people. Radical Islam, they were stabbing the people. Mm-hmm. And the countries like Iran and Qatar, who fund terror, they stabbed those innocent people. They all have blood on their hands as much as the terrorist who used the knife by himself.
All right. Do you think that is an overstatement in any way?
No, I think it's very well put. The ambassador has a great way of putting these things into perspective, and I think that's absolutely correct. It's an incitement mentality. It's a frenzy. It's, you know, no, they didn't organize this guy, but nonetheless, all the teachings, the attitude of the leaders, the things that the leaders have done recently, the things that have been said since the war with Gaza, along with all the way back to Yasser Arafat, have developed this level of incitement that gets these guys worked up and they do horrible things. And I think that's very well put.
All right. Many Christians get a heart for Israel, and then they begin to look at things and say, wait a second, there's Israel's mistreatment of the Palestinians. And look, I went to a conference in Bethlehem and I talked to Palestinian Christians there, and they're suffering and they're oppressed and the Israelis don't treat them well. And American evangelicals aren't seeing the whole picture and they're one-sided. And I respond, look, of course we care about everyone. And if Israel's guilty of anything, of course, as friends of Israel, we call them to account. But I said, you have to understand that the Palestinian Christians are not speaking for the nation, nor are they reflective of the rest of their people, because they're not Muslims, they're not radical Muslims, nor are they going to speak out freely against radical Islam. So your average Palestinian growing up in Gaza, growing up in so-called West Bank or occupied territories, what are they hearing on a daily basis through the media? What are they hearing in their schools? What's their attitude towards Israel?
You're saying Palestinian Christians?
No. The rest of the population.
Well, the rest of the population, you know, it's whether it's the UNRWA schools, the UN refugee schools, whether it's the their internet sites, Mon Agency, you know, the Palestinian Media Watch through Itar Marcus is constantly monitoring what is being said on Hamas TV, Fatah's TV, their online news services, official press releases from the Palestinian leadership. I mean, it's incitement, it's Zionist, bad people, horrible people. They're stealing your land. They don't care about you. But the reality is still 75% of the Palestinians would prefer to live in Israel, ran by a Jewish Israel leadership. And this is also happening very fast in East Jerusalem. More and more Palestinians want Israeli citizenship because they want to live in an East Jerusalem that Israel is responsible for. So the incitement's always happened, Michael. It continues to get worse with time, especially as they see their leader Abbas going to the International Criminal Courts, going to the UN, going to other various places, attempting to place blame on Israel, when in fact in 2000 at Camp David through Ehud Barak and 2008 and 2009 through Ehud Olmert, they received almost everything they wanted, but that was not acceptable, and they have very little to show for the process.
Yeah, and the massive money that goes in, where does it go? It goes into the hands of a few people. Bill, I know you've got a few more minutes you can spend with us. I want to talk about Iran for a moment, and then I want to ask about the thesis of your book, Eye to Eye. So we'll be right back with Bill Koenig, but visit the website, watch.org. You'll find it informative. You'll find it up to the minute. And remember, it's talking about Middle Eastern news and larger issues, but it's always based in terms of the philosophy behind the website on a biblical perspective, watch.org. Be right back with my guest. If you've got some questions for me or my guest relating to Israel and the Middle East, I may get to some calls in a little while. 866-348-7884.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday on the Line of Fire. Remember, if you missed my interview yesterday with Newsweek journalist Kurt Eichenwald, as we discussed our differences about the Bible and our areas of commonality, please go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on Latest Broadcast. It's getting a lot of attention, and I think rightly so. My guest, Bill Koenig, leads, directs, empowers watch.org. This is a website devoted to keeping you right up to date on what is happening in the Middle East and the world with a biblical perspective on Israel. I just want to play a couple of clips and get Bill's reaction to these. President Obama's State of the Union from a couple nights ago, clip number 4, this is what he had to say.
In Iraq and Syria, American leadership, including our military power, is stopping ISIL's advance. Instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, including Arab nations, to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group. We're also supporting a moderate opposition in Syria that can help us in this effort and assisting people everywhere who stand up to the bankrupt ideology of violent extremism.
All right. And this is at the same time that, you know, we're going to work with Iran somehow. Bill, obviously, there are a tremendous amount of complexities. And sometimes, say, in Syria, who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Are there good guys, bad guys? What was your take on the president's comments in that specific focus from his State of the Union address?
Well, it was really interesting, Michael, because I was in a think tank meeting that morning for a couple hours with experts and scholars from that were addressing the situation in the Middle East. And it's like, I wish he'd have been at this briefing, because they are seeing it completely different than he is. ISIS has more territory now in Iraq than they did before the jets and the bombings and all those started. Kobani, which is on the Turkish border, only a city of about 40,000 people. We've had over 500 sorties there, and ISIS is still in control of that. Obama's talked about getting 5,000 troops up to date, rebels, I mean, basically supporting 5,000 rebels. I mean, that won't get anything done. And the problem is finding 5,000 people that are willing to fight in something
right.
That's such a small force, and that's in the Aleppo area. So, and I can go on and on. This is a very complicated situation. I mean, we are on the side of Iran and basically on the side of Assad to extent of fighting ISIS. I mean, this is so amazing what is taking place. And the other thing is Iranians are very smart people. They are multidimensional thinkers. Their negotiators are masters at negotiation. They are master chess players. To be quite honest, the P5 plus one, which is the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, Russia, China, the UK, France, the United States, plus one, which is Germany, are not up to the task of negotiating with the Iranians, and they will negotiate until they complete their nuclear weapon program.
Yeah, and thanks for being so much on the inside of this. Friends, Bill is not just standing around speculating. I'll often tell you on the air, hey, I don't have inside sources to this or that. I'm just telling you based on my reading this. Bill has a lot of inside sources. He's been in this for many, many years. I want you to respond to one more comment and then quickly mention eye to eye before we're out of time. This is Senator Bob Menendez, not happy with President Obama's State of the Union talking points on Iran. Clip number 14. This is what Senator Menendez had to say.
The more I hear from the administration and its quotes, the more it sounds like talking points that come straight out of Tehran. And it feeds to the Iranian narrative of victimization when they are the ones with original sin. An illicit nuclear weapons program going back over the course of 20 years that they are unwilling to come clean on. So I don't know why we feel compelled to make their case.
All right. Overstated, Bill, or right on target?
I think it's right on target, Michael. Here's a senior member in the Senate that's a Democrat that has specifically stated basically to Obama and Kerry, quit running with Iran's talking points. And I and many others appreciate the fact that Mendez and others are trying to bring this up to the public attention. That don't you think sanctions are going to make a difference? I can tell you what, Iran was in desperate shape. And my friends on the inside in Israel were saying they were up against the ropes, and then the Iranian people saw the P5+1 throw a lifeline to the leadership of Iran when they were up against the ropes, and those sanctions have worked, and the stronger the sanctions, the more effective they will be, and we will get a reasonable agreement. Not like this. This is a position of weakness, and the stronger the sanctions, the better off the results.
Why do we keep doing this, putting ourselves in a position of weakness when we're not?
I don't know. John Kerry is not the best Secretary of State we've had. Even the left and right will agree with that in Israel, the political left and the political right, and then the same thing with the media and the left and the right, as well as other people. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day with Al Arabiya. Her family's from Iraq. They really, I asked him, she just got back from Basra, Iraq, and I said, what do they think of Obama and Kerry in Iraq? He said, she just laughed. She laughed. They don't take him serious. You know, mm-hmm. They say they're going to do something, they don't do it. So the whole situation in the Middle East is our enemies don't fear us and our allies don't trust us. And that's unfortunately our position right now and throughout the Middle East.
And friends, if you'd like perspectives from Bill Koenig and just the latest things happening in the Middle East and relating to Israel, go to watch.org. Bill, we've just got a few seconds, but the thesis of your eye-to-eye book was what?
Well, I watched over and over again when the United States would apply pressure, that's the key, apply pressure on Israel to divide their covenant land, we would have enormous record-setting, all-time record-setting events take place in the United States the same day or within 24 hours. I noticed the greater the pressure on Israel, the greater the corresponding catastrophes, such as the perfect storm, 9/11, Katrina, and on. There's been 90 record-setting events since the peace process began in October of 1991.
Bill, what we'll have to do one day when schedule permits is come back on the air, discuss these. I'll play the devil's advocate, try to shoot the things down because you've researched this carefully, and we'll present this to our listening audience. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. Friends, go to watch.org. Thanks so much for joining us, Bill.
Thank you, Michael. God bless you.
All right, God bless. All right, friends, even more important than any book I've written or Bill's written or any website is the Word of God, the Bible. And when you have a beautiful edition of the Bible for your family, sometimes you want to get into it even more. So I'm holding in my hands, we just got one more day to do this on the air. We extended this from last week, especially priced, Tree of Life version of the Bible. This is a beautiful family edition. It's got beautiful artwork in the inside. It's everything about it presented beautifully from the Hebrew inscription on the cover. Call now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website where you can watch a video about the Bible too. Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Only one more day to do this.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Quite out of the blue, almost completely out of the blue, I just got the thought to give away a book on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Completely out of the blue, just the thought just hit me as I'm looking at some books on my desk and put the Messianic Jewish Family Bible down right after talking about it a moment ago. So don't call in yet. Don't pick up the phone and call yet. But it's my book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. One of the most informative books I ever wrote. In fact, let me tell you why I wrote it. In years past, we did not have a staff member in our ministry team who just answered Jewish-related questions. We didn't have anyone that had sufficient background, study in that, and that himself was Jewish as well. So if questions came in like this, we couldn't get anyone else in our team to answer them. We couldn't get one of our professors at the ministry school to answer them. We couldn't get another colleague that would help if I was unable to answer something on the air, if we didn't have other staff that could answer it. So I was the one that would have to take the time, because they're important questions and we didn't want to neglect them, to answer them. And I thought, you know, we get a lot of the same questions. Why don't I have a little fun? Just going to have a little fun, and I'm going to answer some of these questions. But then I got into it. I thought, you know, let me make this into something more substantial. And then ended up turning it into a book, a few hundred pages. Boy, when it came out, the German edition came out, hardcover, it was sent, it was beautiful. It's come out in other languages as well. But 60 questions Christians ask about Jewish beliefs and practices. And I'm not selling it to you. You buy a copy, but I'm going to give a copy away. And let's make it to caller number 8, the number of resurrection, right? Caller number 8, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You're not going to come on the air. You don't have to answer any question. Call number 866-348-7884. A free copy of 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. Let me get back to something that I started the program with a little over a half hour ago. The attack on Zionism. The all-out attack on standing with Israel. Again, it was on Facebook. It was a pretty innocent post. I'm going to scroll down and see if I can find it here. It was announcing that I was going to be speaking at an Israel summit in Colorado. And we put it out in advance, not just for people in that area, but for those who wanted to travel in for the summit. Jack Hayford, Pastor Hayford, a number of other key leaders will be there, leaders in major Jewish ministry. Again, I'll be speaking at this summit as well in about 2 weeks from now. So this was the post. I'm almost there. And I believe we have a winner. Just don't want to look away from the screen here. Join me for a very special Israel summit in Loveland, Colorado. Okay? You have a part to play in this moment in history. Israel Summit, stand firm. The website, israelsummit.org. Join together with believers from around the world for an historic event of crucial importance. Hear from experts and leaders from Israel and around the world on what God is doing in the land of his people today and what our role is as Bible-believing Christians, young and old. That's it. That's what it said. In response, Linda, I'm not going to give you your last name, and her last name embarrassed her, even though she posted with her name on Facebook, Zionist ignoramus. And then goes on to say, the Lord was not pro-war, prone to racism. The name of Jesus has been bastardized. He was a true humanitarian and would never sanction the aggressive, greedy actions of Israel or the USA. Why this level of hostility? And then why does someone else post a little bit after that? Zionism is evil and of the devil. God states that Israel will be punished and a lot of Jews will die for failure to obey God's law. I cannot and will never, not ever believe Zionism is of God. And if it isn't of God, it is of the devil, to be totally annihilated and destroyed with impunity. Why the sick, ugly attack on standing with Israel?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. You know, I want to play a couple of other quotes for you from Democrats who are critical of President's State of the Union remarks regarding Iran. 866-34-TRUTH. Tell you what, I'll give away another book, but shout out to our winner, Rich. Well done. And by the way, if you're listening later on our website or by podcast, don't call because don't call for a few reasons. One reason is we've had a winner hours ago, or perhaps days ago, or weeks ago. And also, if you're going at the wrong time, nobody's here to answer the phone anyway at the studio. So just I called it, because you got to do it live. All right. I wonder if that ever happened to anybody. Probably they weren't thinking and did it. I'll give out the number again in a moment. I want to point this out, though. President's State of the Union address was on Monday. All right. That was on Tuesday night. Yesterday did the interview with Kurt Eichenwald, the Newsweek interview, and didn't even mention State of the Union address. One, we were really focused on Newsweek, and two, I normally don't watch or listen to State of the Union addresses, whether Republicans, Democrat or Republican. I can't remember the last time I watched one. I'll sometimes read the transcript afterwards. But for me, it's normally just the latest political talking points, and I'm not really learning much from it in terms of reality. So I'm not an Obama basher. I'm not one of those who, the moment the speech is over, I'm all over it. You'll notice I didn't write an article about this, okay? I didn't write an article about the State of the Union address. I didn't go after the president and say, well, he botched it here and he blew it here, because I'm not an Obama basher. Where I differ with him, I differ, and I make that plain. And whoever the president is, whatever party he's with, whatever the color of his skin, whatever his ethnic background, if I agree, I agree. If I don't agree, I don't agree. And that's that. And I'm not politically based, I'm biblically based, and the criticisms, the issues I have, that's where they come from. All right, so this is immediately before the State of the Union address. This is on January 21st, but this is another Democrat, all right? This is Representative Tulsi Gabbard, and she's on Fox News First. This was on January 21st. Talking about these things. And then 5 days before that, she's on with Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room on CNN. So just want you to understand, this Democrat, and it's not just on Fox News, she's appearing on CNN discussing these issues. So this is the conversation with Wolf Blitzer, clip number 15 on CNN, about 5 days, 4 days before the State of the Union address.
What is so frustrating now, as we look at the situation there, our administration refuses to recognize who our enemy is. And unless and until that happens, then it's impossible to come up with a strategy to defeat that enemy. We have to recognize that this is about radical Islam. This is as much a military war as it is an ideological war. And we've got to understand what that ideology is and challenge it.
All right. Why can't we say we're dealing with radical Islam? Why can't we say that these are Muslims who are basing what they're doing on their interpretation of Islam, even if you believe it's the wrong interpretation? Why not do that? Won't that help us combat this better? Don't we have to identify what we're dealing with to rightly combat it? Scholl said this to say, clip number 16.
This is not just about one group called ISIS or another group called Al-Qaeda. This is about an overall threat posed by this radical Islamic extremist agenda that exists all around the world, as we're seeing, unfortunately, most recently in Paris and in Europe.
So very quickly, Congresswoman, you're upset you didn't hear those words from the president today. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm upset that the president and the White House, whether it's today or yesterday or tomorrow, is not actually saying this is a war that the Islamic extremists are posing against the United States and against the West, and we recognize who our enemy is. Unless and until you recognize who our enemy is and understand them, then we won't be effective in defeating that threat, and we're going to continue to see the kinds of tragic incidences that we've seen most recently in Paris.
Ah, remember, she is a Democrat. Senator Menendez, that we listened to moments ago, is a Democrat. Others have spoken out as well. I watched a clip from Don Lemon on CNN, and he was interviewing two Muslims, or a Muslim, perhaps a former Muslim, but these were raised in this, experts in this, and then someone with more of a law enforcement background from America, about is Islam more violent than other religions? And the first gentleman who was sitting in the middle, I believe it was Tawfiq Hamid, he said there are clearly aspects of teaching within Islam that are violence-based and violence-begetting, and those must be dealt with. Those must be addressed and dealt with. The law enforcement gentleman was very lucid. I was surprised with how much he knew about these different areas. But he was saying it's undeniable that these different groups are Islam-based. And then the Muslim leader said he was just shocked to hear this being said. And Christianity's had its violence and its terrorism, and et cetera. And then the law enforcement gentleman said, yeah, Christianity had seasons of violence and inquisitions and things like that. He said, but these things, the worst of them centuries and centuries ago, in other words, whatever was done wrong has been corrected. So the Muslim spokesman took exception to this. And he began to mention different groups and different terrorists and said, these groups, these terrorists, they are Christian. But they don't represent Christianity. That was his point. They absolutely do not represent Christianity or the teachings of Jesus any more than Al-Qaeda or ISIS or Boko Haram represent Islam or the teachings of Muhammad. Let me just pause for a moment. I'm going to give away another copy of 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. You'll find it super helpful and practical and informative, whether it's dealing with Jewish history, whether it's dealing with whether the law applies to believers today, whether it's dealing with what language Jesus spoke. We'll go from the number of resurrection to the number of perfection. Caller number 7, the book is yours free. You don't have to answer any questions. Just a giveaway today, 866-348-7884. That's 866-34-TRUTH. All right, so I appreciated that this Muslim gentleman was not denouncing Christianity or the New Testament based on acts of terror or alleged acts of terror carried out by alleged followers of Jesus. He was saying that you cannot characterize Islam, 1.6 billion Muslims worldwide, whatever the exact number is, by the actions of these groups. On the one hand, of course he's right. There are hundreds of millions of peace-loving Muslims. There are hundreds of millions of Muslims who are absolutely appalled, absolutely, totally appalled at these acts of violence and at the beheading of innocent people and at the killing of men, women, and children. And they can't relate to that any more than you and I can relate to that. The problem is this, and this is what is being missed. And thank you, friends. We do have a winner. Thank you. Sorry for being a little slow to announce it, but we do have a winner, so thanks. Here's what he's missing. He says the Oklahoma City bombings, the colleague of Timothy McVeigh belonging to Christian Unity, and there are 250,000 members in that. Okay, whatever the particular group was that he belonged to, does that group have a thoroughgoing Bible-based Christian theology, and they are devout Christians, the several hundred thousand of them, and part of their creed is terror? Or is this someone who belonged to this group who was a right-wing terrorist, and that's why he did what he did? In other words, to say, well, this person's Catholic, or this person's Protestant, or this person's this or that, meaning, you know, they have a Bible, or they go to church sometimes, there's not a direct tie from that, or from any of the teachings of Jesus, a direct tie from that over to terrorism. Whereas these groups are committed radical Islamic groups. and they seek to follow the teachings of the Quran. And they base what they do on the Quran and on Islamic tradition and on previous examples going back to Muhammad. That's the difference. They are devout Muslims, extremely devout, and they are being cheered on by large numbers of Muslims worldwide. That's what we have to recognize, and that is a fundamental difference. When we come back, I'm going to address this issue of why the ugly attack on Zionism and standing with Israel. Well, it seems demonic, does it not? Congratulations to Ken, listening on WEZE in Boston.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Michael Brown on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Can people have legitimate problems with Israel today? Oh, yeah, of course. Can people have legitimate problems with Jewish people? Things about Jewish people they don't like. Oh, of course. Every people group has certain characteristics. Obviously, there are countless exceptions to every rule. But, you know, I've been to India now 22 times. I've been to Italy 21 times. I've been to Korea a dozen times, Germany, England, at least those amount of times. In different countries, you spend time with the people, and there are certain personalities, there are certain types, there are certain strengths and weaknesses that different groups have. We all do. Americans have certain personalities. Again, there are exceptions to all these rules. But you're in enough countries, you're with enough people, you see good and bad with everybody. So no one is suggesting for a split second that Israel is perfect or the Jews. To know a Jew is to love a Jew. No, we have our issues like everybody else, okay, our good qualities and our bad qualities. And Israel is far from perfect. But if I simply say God scattered the Jewish people in judgment as he promised, but he also promised to regather us in mercy, and he has regathered us to the land, and he is the one behind it. Why this outpouring of anger, hatred? And again, let me read this by a gentleman named Edwin. Zionism is evil and of the devil. God states that Israel will be punished and a lot of Jews will die for failure to obey God's law. I cannot and will not ever believe Zionism is of God. And by the way, every time he spells God, it's with a small g, but he spells Zionism with a capital Z. And he said, and if it isn't of God, it is, and then he has in all caps, of the devil to be totally annihilated and destroyed with impunity. I mean, this is beyond sick. This is beyond sick. When someone says that Israel is to be totally annihilated and destroyed with impunity, so whoever destroys Israel, whatever they do, there's no guilt and there's no judgment in that. That's a sick comment. That comment is sick. And that comment is of the devil. And that comment is evil. Absolutely. The question is, why do people feel that way? Why such demonic hatred of Israel and the Jewish people? Why such antagonism? Why the Hitlers? Why the radical Muslims today? Why are they united in their hatred of Israel and the Jewish people? It cannot be explained naturally. One of the answers in my book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, and one of the chapters in my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, deals with the diabolical nature of anti-Semitism. that there is no natural, simple, rational explanation for it. I've given lectures at Yale University, Columbia University in years past at the invitation of Christian groups open to the public, but mainly drawing in students, sometimes faculty from the university. I have laid out why there is no natural human explanation for anti-Semitism. First, I demonstrate how long-lasting the hatred of Jews is, and then getting even more intense in the days before the restoration of the nation of Israel, and then after the restoration of the nation of Israel, and then how widespread it is, joining together white supremacists and black supremacists, joining together a Stalin and a Hitler and a Haji Amin al-Husseini, and on and on. And then the absurdity of the lies, the nature of the lies that are being told, and Jews control the Vatican, and Jews are spreading AIDS worldwide, and it was Israel behind the terror attacks in Paris, and on and on and on. All kinds of bizarre and sick, crazy statements and charges. So you have all of that, and then you have the incredible violence of it. Yeah, there's often violence that's so demonic and so ugly, but why with consistency, it seems, against Israel and the Jewish people? And then I go through the explanations. I've done this in the lectures and in the writing, in these writings. I go through the explanations. Well, it's because there always has to be a scapegoat. Well, why the Jews? From the Black Plague to all these other times, why the Jews? Well, it doesn't answer the question at all. Well, it's economic, you see, because Jews control the money. Well, what about all the times when Jews couldn't even work decent jobs and when Jews were often the poorest in the communities? What about then? Well, it's because Jews are different because of Torah observance. Yeah. I understand when you're different, when you stand out, when people think that you think you're better than everybody else, there can be attack and hatred. But secular Jews, assimilated Jews are hated. Israeli Jews who are secular are hated. German Jews, it's often said before the Holocaust, were more German than they were Jewish. Yet they were hated. And I show how none of the explanations works. And the only possible explanation is simply this, that God has chosen the Jewish people for a redemptive purpose in the earth. And because he chose the Jewish people, he promised to keep the Jewish people no matter what. No matter what we did, there would be discipline, but he would keep us and preserve us. And he's laid that out explicitly in the Word. Probably the clearest place of all, Jeremiah 31, verses 35 to 37. Check it out when you have a moment. And notice it follows right on the heels of the promise of a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. So, in short, God made promises to Israel and promised to preserve us. If we could be wiped out as a people, God would be a liar. He promised to regather us in his grace and mercy, not because of anything we did, but because his name was being blasphemed. So this has to do with the honor of his name. And revival in Israel will mean revival in the world. And a Jewish Jerusalem must welcome the Messiah back for all these reasons. Satan hates the Jewish people, wants to destroy them, wants to stop the restoration of Israel, wants to keep Jerusalem out of Jewish hands, wants to keep Jews away from Jesus. It's a spiritual explanation, and it's one that no one could refute in the lectures that I did at these universities. All right, friends, take advantage of this. We extended this from last week, the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, the shipment on its way, and we may have gotten it in today, otherwise tomorrow. Their ministries, this is such an extraordinary gift that they're saying, hey, send our ministry love gift of $100 or $125. We'll send you this. Normally priced at $70. We've reduced the price to $60. And we're paying the postage, one of the most beautiful Bibles you'll ever see, and it's based on the new Tree of Life Messianic Jewish version. Call now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Order as many copies as you like, or go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, just click on the video. You'll see it right on the homepage. You can find out more. Watch the video, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, there is no other explanation that works for anti-Semitism and the extreme hatred of Israel other than the fact that it is of the devil. Anti-Semitism is. From terrorism in Israel to terrorist groups in America, from Islam to radical Islam, the question of suffering in Judaism. We'll cover it all today on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In a few minutes, I am going to be bringing on a special guest, someone who was very close to 9/11 terror attacks, a survivor. I want to talk about her journey. I want to talk about her focus on radical Islam. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. If you missed my interview yesterday with Newsday journalist Kurt Eichenwald, the one who wrote the controversial piece on the Bible at Christmas time last year. And again, Newsweek published my lengthy rebuttal to that. You can listen to the entire show. It's getting a lot of attention on my website. Just go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest broadcast to listen to it. And then when you do, share it with your friends on Facebook, get word out to others. And then make sure that you check out my latest article. You'll find it fascinating. It is called Setting Anderson Cooper Straight, and it will catch you up with, I talked about this on the radio, responding to his ridiculous talk the other day about my friend Larry Tomczak and Anderson Cooper denying there's such a thing as a gay agenda or gay indoctrination through the media or schools or Hollywood. So check that out, askdrbrown.org, click on latest article. All right. Before I get to my guest, I want to talk about Jewish suffering for a moment, or excuse me, the Jewish perspective on suffering. You remember in November, the shocking attacks in a synagogue in Har Nof, Jerusalem, on the outskirts of Jerusalem, a quiet Orthodox Jewish town, men that were praying at early morning prayer, 6:25 a.m. There are numerous prayer groups all over the city there, the area there. And they were in early morning prayer. Two Palestinian terrorists barged in, a shooting. Four of them were killed, eight of them wounded, four of them seriously. With a gun jammed, they continued to attack with knives and a meat cleaver. And then they were killed by police, but not before they killed one of the police officers. Amazingly, in a matter of weeks after the tragedy, a book was published, and I just got it. I didn't know about it until a couple weeks ago. I just got it, and it's those who survived the attack, those who should have been there that day and weren't, those who lost close friends. But it's all from the perspective that nothing happens without the hand of God. Jews are not Calvinists. Jews do not believe in predestination the way Calvinism would. The Jews of the Qumran Scrolls, the Dead Sea Scrolls, had more of a predestinarian belief, it appears. But the standard Jewish formulation about predestination and free will is hakol tzafui, everything is foreknown, v'harishut netuna, but free will is given. Yet, religious Jews believe that those that were in the synagogue that day were there by divine choice. And those who were not in the synagogue that day were there by divine choice. And therefore, God brought these events about for some purpose known to him and his inscrutable will. And a religious Jew would say, we love him just the same and we trust him just the same. I want to give a couple of perspectives on that. I got this book not just interested to hear this perspective right after the tragedy, but in keeping with my commentary on the book of Job, trying to read different perspectives on suffering and understand things more. So a little later in the broadcast, I'm going to come back to that. And out of the blue, the first hour, I decided to give a few books away. I'm going to do that a little bit later in the second hour. We come back, I am going to speak with attorney Deborah Weiss. Stay tuned.
Fire we please, and the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Our administration, for whatever reason, has reiterated that they will not talk about radical Islam or Islamic terrorism. Rather, these are murderers. These are extremists who are perverting Islam. Then there are Islamic groups in America who decry the violence, Islamic attacks, and say this is not Islam and we're mortified by it. And I believe some are sincere and some are purely political. We're going to walk through this minefield on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday today. Phone number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Got a call on the air, about a week and a half ago from one of our listeners, and she pointed me to further information that confirmed suspicions I had about the Council of American Islamic Relations, known as CARE. I cited her when I wrote an article about why I'm not buying their denunciation of the Paris terror attacks because of other comments they had made. Deborah Weiss, attorney, works for Vigilance, an organization dedicated to raising awareness of nonviolent radical Islam. She's considered an expert in the defamation of religions, UN resolutions, and the Islamist stifling of speech. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us again on The Line of Fire.
Thank you for inviting me, Dr. Brown.
My joy. I thoroughly enjoyed the brief conversation we had when you called in, immediately followed up on links that you were kind enough to send us, and was impressed by the work you've done, even a full-length book that you've helped fuel the research for. We're not going to major on this, but something close to so many of us in America, the 9/11 terror attacks. My wife's brother, Douglas, was killed in the World Trade Center on that day. I'm sure you know many people, families that were affected. What were you doing on 9/11?
Well, first of all, I'm really sorry to hear about your wife's brother. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
My home at the time was in Gateway Plaza, which was the closest residence to the World Trade Center. It was Kitty Corner. And
really?
My office was the office that was the closest building to the number 7 building. So normally I would walk out of my apartment through the World Trade Center. I'd go through the World Trade Center, and then when I came out, I was at work. And that day I was running a little bit late, fortunately. And I mean, I don't know if I should go into the whole story, but I'll just...
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Because that'll be like a whole... That'll wind up being the whole show, but...
Right. That's right.
Yeah, I heard a really, really, really loud noise, and I didn't know what it was. I thought my upstairs neighbor's furniture was falling. And then I turned on the TV, and I saw that a plane flew into the World Trade Center. And then shortly after, I heard another loud noise, which was even louder. And I wound up... you know, let's just put it this way. Eventually, the lights went off. The whole building started to shake. I had a cat, and her box was in the closet. And when I went to get it to, like, dig my nails into her and throw her in the box, because I knew I had to get out of there, I couldn't see anything out the window. And my window spanned the entire wall in my living room from left to right. And it wasn't facing the World Trade Center. It was facing in the other direction. So it was a beautiful Tuesday morning that day, and when I woke up and during this time, I couldn't see one ray of light. It was pitch black. So I wound up taking her and running downstairs. We were trapped in the building for a while with all the smoke. People were coming in from the World Trade Center into the lobby with red eyes and covered in white, and we were trapped in there because there was nowhere to go. One exit went toward the World Trade Center, and the other exit was locked. So I and a few other people kind of went into somebody else's apartment, the farthest apartment away from the World Trade Center on the ground floor. I remember there was one woman there with newborn twins. They were 2 weeks old. She had one in each arm and tears in her eyes. Some people started choking from the smoke that was coming in. And eventually, they unlocked the back doors, and most people left. Most people ran, but because there was no plan, and really, where were we supposed to go? Because one direction is going uptown, not exactly toward the World Trade Center, but still in that direction, and the other is the tip of Manhattan. The other direction, you know, is an end zone. So, excuse me, the family, and a few, you know, police officers and firemen stayed there, and we found out that what that was when the whole building was shaking and I couldn't see anything out the window was when the first tower fell.
Oh.
So eventually, you know, it was a judgment call. Everything along the way was a judgment call. Do you run or do you stay? Do you run left? Did you run right? Do you, you know, do you call your spouse when you're before you leave or not?
And right. You don't know in detail what's happened or what's about to happen. So you don't know which way is safe and what isn't on top of this.
Of course not. And a lot of times, you know, for example, afterwards, I had somebody say to me, actually, the guy who was the concierge guy, he said, well, what did you take your cat for? I would have gotten her. I'm like, you don't even know what's going on, and you're right, because a lot of people afterwards ask me questions like, well, why didn't you do this or why didn't you do that? But the truth is that people in other parts of the world had a much better idea of what was happening than we did in the situation. When you're in the situation, it would be scary enough if you knew what was happening, right? But part of the fear is you don't know what's happening. You just know it's really, really, really bad. I left out the part where I didn't know we were going to be talking about this, but they were all screaming outside. Like, I just heard tons of people screaming, and, you know, everybody was running is what it was. So anyway, at some point, the apartment I was in was like three steps up from the lobby. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, a police officer came to the bottom of those steps and started screaming hysterically, everybody in that apartment, out now, get out now. And they didn't say, and then that officer started running. So you know it's bad when an officer is running in front of you, and you don't know what's going on. So we just ran. I ran outside, and as soon as I got outside, I knew we were at war. The entire place was white. Battery Park, behind that building, was a black car park with green benches and trees overlooking the water. But the whole park was black tar. They had, like, a volleyball net and just, people used to walk their dogs there and take their babies there, and the entire thing was white. White trees, white benches, white tar on the floor, and there were strewn shoes, strewn baby carriages with no babies, because everybody, if they were running, if they dropped something, they just left it there and kept running.
Yeah.
And there was an officer there. I ran by, and I said, which direction? He's like, I don't know. So I just picked a direction and ran south toward the tip of Manhattan. And I still didn't know what was going on. I actually had a little bit of an underreaction that day. I was running next to some guy, and I said, hey, so how's it going? Why are we running? And he said, I think the second tower is going to fall. And I turned around, and I was like, holy, the whole building was tilted in our direction. And as you know, that was a tall building. And had it fallen in that direction, I would not be on the phone with you today. But I said, you know, I don't think we're getting out of here alive. And he said, well, if we run as fast as we can, I think we have a prayer. I said, this is as fast as I can go, and I'm holding this heavy box with a cat. He said, give me the cat, and we ran. And then out of the blue, a Coast Guard rescue ferry appeared, said, are you okay? There were about 15 of us that jumped in. There was a girl who was about 15 years old who popped herself in the corner and crossed herself. She had tears in her eyes. And we were about 2 yards out when the whole building fell. And that was it. We wound up going to a triage center in New Jersey, where we stayed the entire day just watching the buildings burn. And there was no plan. I kept waiting for the plan. There was no plan. And to make a long story short, I was lucky enough to have a very nice woman who was the mother of somebody I met there, take me home with them. And she took a couple of us home. I wound up sleeping on the floor because she had a very, very small apartment. And she gave us some clothes and some food and some hugs. And my home and my office were both deemed a crime scene. And I was homeless for 2 months. My office was closed in this place for 8 months. And I was one of the lucky ones because I lived.
Right, and you lived to talk about it, and without having an immediate loved one lost in it. And yet, what an extraordinary account. The trauma, the proximity to it is mind-boggling. Deborah, when we come back, I just want to find out, was Islam, radical Islam, on your radar at that time? Was that a major part of your thinking? And then we're going to move from then until today. You can find Deborah's work at Vigilance Now, vigilancenow.org. My guest, attorney Deborah Weiss. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Those are the voices of Hazakim as they sing about Jesus, the Messiah, crucified for people of Israel, the people of the world. I'm speaking not so much about Israel, not about Christianity, but about Islam and radical Islam with my guest, Deborah Weiss. Just talked about how she survived 9/11, and boy, I'm sure the heart, just can't even glimpse for a split second without going through something like that, how traumatic and intense it must have been. Deborah, when 9/11 happened, so this is now over 13 years ago. Was Islam or radical Islam a major issue to you? Were you focused on issues like this as an attorney and in the larger work you were doing?
Not at all. I was an appellate attorney for juvenile prosecutions, and I also represented the three police commissioners in New York on appeals for pretrial motions when officers sued them. I knew nothing about Islam, and I didn't know much about terrorism. At the time it happened, I did know that it was a terrorist attack, and I did know that it had something to do with the Middle East, and that's pretty much all I knew. And subsequently, I embarked on a journey to find out why they wanted to kill us. And when I moved to the D.C. area, I started attending national security meetings because, hey, I got a sudden interest in national security for some reason. And I originally was interested in terrorism, but somewhere along the way, I heard about what I'll call, for lack of a better term, nonviolent radical Islam. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure if I believed it at first. You know, I'm a New Yorker. I was surrounded by very liberal people, not religious people, you know, mostly secular. And I also had some personal reasons that I had a predisposed bias in the direction of not believing it.
Okay.
At the time, I would not have known who was a credible source or a not credible source because I didn't know anything about it to even know who to read or not to read. So I basically wound up reading on the internet literally 4 hours a day, Monday through Friday, each day, from left to right and back again. And then on the weekends, I'd pick one day and devote 7 hours to it, reading. Oh. And that does not include the time that I went to seminars. There's a lot of think tanks in Washington, and they have from time to time various panels and speakers on the subject. And you can hear both sides of the issue. So I wanted to know the truth, and I wasn't going to stop reading and listening until I arrived at a conclusion. 2 years later, I arrived at a conclusion, which was that it's true, that it's dangerous, that it's terrible, and that most people aren't aware of it. And to be honest, I started having nightmares, and I woke up one morning and I said, you know, I have to do something about it to whatever extent I can. Obviously, I'm only one person, but I didn't want to stand idly by like a non-Nazi German and do nothing when I knew what was going on. At that point, I started writing articles, speaking up, and doing everything I can, and now I do it full time. I obviously don't make the kind of money and have the kind of lifestyle I had when I was working as an attorney, but I think it's so, so important because it's at the base, our freedom is at stake. It's about freedom, and you know, so I just feel like I have to do whatever I can to raise awareness. And I have a particular expertise in what's called combating defamation of religions, or defamation of religions for short.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a lot of, not all of it, but a lot of it is related to the free speech issue, which we've now seen in France, you know, where they where a bunch of Islamic terrorists murdered people for something that they said or drew. And so I have a particular expertise in that. And you're right, I did write a book on Council on American Islamic Relations, its use of lawfare and intimidation. I also wrote a chapter on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and another book on it. They try to tackle it from a different angle with UN resolutions. But it's basically going on all over the world, mostly the West is the target. There are different groups doing it, different target audiences and different tactics, and that's what I specialize in. And by the way, I have an article. Too bad it wasn't published today. It'll be published in the next few days on Punt Page Magazine on the incident in France and the aftermath, what's been going on afterwards, which has not been largely reported, if you want me to talk about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, we will. And since I did ask you first the 9/11 question and took time, but I'm so glad I did, and it's so important for our listeners to hear. Again, you have been moved to do something sacrificial, and you've been moved to do it because you care about people, you care about the nation, you care about freedom. And
right.
An aside to all of this is that the highest number of people that normally get killed by radical Muslims are other Muslims. So Islam as well needs to be very concerned with these things. But we'll keep talking. If you can stay on a little longer, we'll keep going. And just real quick, because we've got a break coming up, if folks go to vigilancenow.org, what will they find there on the website?
In all honesty, the website's a little crappy because I did it myself and I'm not a tech person, but they will see links to all my articles. If they're interested in my 9/11 story, I think the first two articles listed there are about the day, one is about the aftermath, because most people don't realize what it was like afterwards to have survived it. And the rest of it is links to the articles, some links to my speeches. They're not all posted, but a lot of them are. And on the last page, it's one of those fill out the forms, if you want, where if people want to contact me either to give a speech to their organization or for a media interview. I was on Fox News on Saturday, but if anyone wants to reach me that way, I do check it every day.
All right, great. Hey, listen, one of the most basic websites, I'm looking at the site now, and it's totally user-friendly, you find what you need there, but one of the most populated websites, visited websites, on all of internet is the Drudge Report, and you can't get any more basic and simple than that. But we'll be right back with my guest, Deborah Weiss, again, to find out more about her story, the articles she's writing, tremendous amount of information based on years of intensive research, vigilancenow.org. Zechariah 12, I'm reading from the Tree of Life version, the burden of the word of Adonai concerning Israel. A declaration of Adonai, who stretched out the heavens, laid the foundation of the earth, and formed the spirit of man within him. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of reeling to all the surrounding peoples when they besiege Jerusalem as well as Judah. And this is God saying that there's going to be world controversy against Israel, Jerusalem, and yet God will deliver Israel. This is in the Hebrew scriptures where this is written. Remember that we extend it. Last week's special offer with the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, brand new, literally the shipment coming in today or tomorrow to our offices. We can't wait to get these out to you. Such great demand for these. We extended the offer from last week. To find out more about the special edition of the New Tree of Life version, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. When you're there, you'll see right on the homepage, click on the special resource offer there. I've got a brief video that'll tell you more. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm speaking with attorney Deborah Weiss. Her website, vigilancenow.org. Deborah, free speech is very important to you, but you are considered an expert in the concept of defamation of religion. So if you're going to have free speech and people can say what they want to say, that means they may defame Jesus or Muhammad or other religions, and yet you're an expert in the concept of defamation of religions. How do these things work hand in hand?
They do work hand in hand, Dr. Brown, because basically in the American legal system, the term defamation only applies to people. And in order to defame a person, you have to make a false statement of fact. If you state your opinion, if you say someone's a jerk or I hate them, no matter how bad the comment is, if it's mere opinion, then it's not defamation. Similarly, if you state a factual opinion and say, if you say, oh, Joey is a murderer, and in fact he is a murderer and he's sitting in jail convicted on murder, that's not defamation because it's a true statement. So the only statements in this country that qualify as defamatory are statements of fact that are intentionally false. Like if you said Joey's a murderer and he's really not, then that's defamatory. So we don't have in this country the concept of defaming a religion or defaming a political idea or a policy or any idea. The whole concept behind free speech is that you should be able to debate, discuss, criticize, and analyze any policy, religion, or idea. So the concept of combating defamation of religions is based on the premise that you shouldn't be able to make false statements about religion. And specifically, unfortunately, it's really just Islamist organizations that push this concept. And though they couch it in a phrase that sounds that like they're including all religions, in their interpretation and their application, they apply it only to Islam. In fact, the original UN resolution was called Combating Defamation of Islam. But nobody supported it. Well, I shouldn't say nobody, but it wasn't sufficient support, and then they changed the name of it. However, the text of the resolution is still only references specifically Islam, and the way they interpret it is just Islam. And as you probably know, when you quote-unquote defame the Muslim prophet Muhammad or anything with Islam, you'll get various negative responses from murder to lawsuits to pressure to all kinds of things, whereas, you know, Jews and Christians and Judaism and Christianity is quote-unquote defamed all the time, and you don't see them going around in a, you know, worldwide network trying to murder people who voice that view. You know, you might get letters to the editor or some understandably legitimate opposition to it, but that's what the debate about free ideas is.
Just to jump in for a second, we've had posts on Facebook that a graphic artist has done for us, maybe with verses from the Quran or maybe just listing Islamic terrorist attacks. And then I'll add a caption. I understand that many Muslims denounce these and are peace-loving, but why is this so common in Islam? For discussion. And then the post to go viral, we've had it now two or three times with one particular post that Facebook got so many comments that they actually blocked us from posting on Facebook. Now, they subsequently reinstated it and apologized to me and said it shouldn't have been removed. But the level of outcry, even when all we did was factually list things and then said religion of peace, let's talk about it.
Right.
So it seems that the sensitivity there, and look, reports of 800,000 Muslims demonstrating in Chechnya against Charlie Hebdo in France, rather than saying we renounce the terror, they're demonstrating. All right, we'll go to France in a moment. My guest, Deborah Weiss, her website, vigilancenow.org. We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Middle Eastern music reminds you it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. Back to my guest, Deborah Weiss, her website, vigilancenow.org. Deborah, you've documented, we all see the disproportional response from Islam. I don't like cartoons and things that mock other religions or people's faith. I want to have dialogue with them, and where I differ, want to differ intelligently. But it happens all the time. I'm a public figure on a certain level. I get mocked, and fine. I mean, whatever. It just comes with it. Every day, the president has cartoons mocking him, and, you know, big ears or George Bush with, but, you know, that's this character. It's going to happen. But you don't have supporters of Obama saying we'll kill you. And then when Charlie Hebdo had even more horrific cartoons about Jesus and Catholicism, you didn't have people saying we're going to kill you for that. And yet there's something about the Islamic response and even the justification of it by other Muslim leaders that's just this different. It's just part of the religion, or the radical part of the religion. So, Debbie, what's happened in France? How have they handled these issues of free speech versus offending Muslims?
Right. Well, first, I just want to add one thing to what you were saying before the break, which was that you got a negative response for posts, even though the comments you made were true. So going yes. back to the defamation of religions concept, that was another big difference I wanted to mention, is that it's really not, even though you're talking about an idea, not a person, it still wouldn't anywhere remotely meet the definition of defamation the way we understand it, because it includes anything that shows Muslims or Islam in a negative light, even if it's true. So you can't mm-hmm. criticize Islamic theocracies, the stoning of women, any of the laws that they have in Sharia law, the beheadings, none of it. So all of that they would consider defaming Islam. And the reason they do this is twofold. One is because it violates their blasphemy codes. And this is how you can tell that. And I want to make the disclaimer that I'm not saying all Muslims. There are people who identify themselves as Muslim who would like to practice within the confines of the Constitution the way Jews and Christians do, but they're limited. You know, they can pray five times a day, they can wear the hijab, they can eat the food they want to eat, but in its full-blown expression, Sharia law can only be implemented by the state. And it would have all kinds of aspects to it that are totally anti-constitutional, like the criminal hudud punishments. And a lot of people try to say, well, they don't want, you know, a lot of people don't want those criminal punishments. That might be true, but then they still want other anti-freedom measures, like the fact that you can't have freedom of speech or freedom of religion. And in any other religion, like Judaism or Christianity, you know, if I want to, whatever my religion calls for, whether it's speech or attire or food, mm-hmm. then I can do it. The right. way you, the difference is that in Islam, they want to impose it on the other people, on infidels, on the kufr. They want to impose. It's not just a manual for Muslims. It's a manual of how Muslims need to treat non-Muslims, and a high percentage of it is devoted to that. And that, to me, is what makes it much more, it's not just a religion and a spiritual ideology. In its full-blown expression, it includes a judiciary system, a financial system, an educational system, and, you know, and all different kinds. It's a whole way of life, an entire political ideology. So the first reason they have this defamation of religions, which basically means the stifling of speech and the stifling of criticism of Islam, even including true statements, is make infidels and non-Muslims comply with their blasphemy laws. So it's a religious reason. And the second reason is it gives a safe haven, a safe space for those who do have either terrorist or other anti-freedom goals to pursue mm-hmm. those goals without being examined or even acknowledged. Because if there's no such thing as Islamic terrorism, and you can't go and try to identify the Islamic terrorist, can you? So it's a national security risk. And we have, for example, in under this administration, unfortunately, I mean, I used to try to keep it nonpartisan, but it's been kind of difficult with this administration because, you know, they've had the FBI, the CIA, State Department, and then the Department of Homeland Security and the National Counterterrorism Center all completely rewrite their training material for counterterrorism and national security professionals. They have, quote unquote, uninvited back about 87 trainers, some of whom have been working with those agencies for scores of years. If they mentioned anything about Islam, and they didn't have to say Islam or all of Islam. I worked with a guy who was one of those trainers for scores of years, and he always said radical Islam or radical Muslims, but even with qualifiers that some people question, you know, and I don't want to get into that now, but even with any version of any qualifier, this administration has purged the language in all their official documents and has tried to disconnect any terrorism or anti-freedom measures with Islam. So in France, I'm sure most of you know by now that they had the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. And actually, yes, they were known for making fun of all kinds of religious figures, not just Muhammad. And they have been plagued with death threats from Muslims for years. And in fact, in 2011, their old offices were firebombed. So recently, in January, 12 people were killed in attacks on the Charlie Hebdo offices. And subsequently, France had a unity march. It was the largest rally that has ever been held in France, in the history of France. They had over 40 leaders from around the world attend.
So sadly, we were lacking in our presence there.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Totally amazing. And by the way, Attorney General Eric Holder was in France at the time.
Yes, he was.
He was in France at the time of that rally, but I guess he couldn't be bothered to go to the rally. And Netanyahu was actually asked not to come. I don't know if you were aware of that.
President Hollande did not want to bring in any potential issue with Palestinian conflict or draw attention away from this by divisive issues with Israel. So when Netanyahu said he was going to be there, then the president of France said, all right, then I'm going to invite Abbas as well, which made for a more interesting scene with Mahmoud Abbas marching in a demonstration for free speech, prompting an open letter from a Palestinian journalist to bring this to the attention of the president of France. But so France has this massive rally, largest in French history.
Right. A lot of people holding signs saying Liberté or, you know, Je suis Charlie Hebdo, I am Charlie. And what a lot of people don't know is after that rally, there has been a wave of arrests in France. In fact, all across Europe, but in France specifically, the last I checked was about 2 days ago. There were already 69 people arrested for speech that they made that was ostensibly offensive. And the charges were on one of two charges. One was either defending or inciting terrorism. And the other charge was public insults based on religion. So I wanted to give you two examples. One was a very controversial comedian who was known for making, quote unquote, anti-Semitic jokes. And he was arrested for a Facebook post he made which said, Je suis Charlie Koulibaly, which is a merging of the names of the Charlie Hebdo magazine and the one of the terrorists that shot the people at the Jewish cafe a few days after the Charlie Hebdo murders. So he was saying that he feels like both. And for that post, he was detained. And there was also a 16-year-old boy arrested for his Facebook post. He lived with his parents. He had no criminal history. And he put a post of a man holding the magazine, Charlie Hebdo, and it showed bullets going through the magazine into his chest. And in French, the caption read, I hope you don't mind if I say one curse word on air. It said, Hebdo, Charlie Hebdo is shit. It doesn't stop bullets. And it was a play on a cartoon that the magazine had published years ago where it showed some Egyptian guy saying, and it was the Quran. It was the same thing. There were bullets going through the Quran to him and saying, the Quran is it doesn't stop bullets. So presumably the kid was a Muslim kid saying, and I suppose I'm interpreting here, that the message is, you know, if, like, Quran doesn't stop the bullets and freedom doesn't either. But their definition, I want the audience to be aware that America is, without exception, the only country in the West that really has free speech. All of Europe.
I just got to jump in. We are, unfortunately, out of time. Go to the website, vigilancenow.org. Read Deborah's articles. Find out more about what she's doing and be educated and alert. We'll be right back.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Obviously, I could be speaking with Deborah Weiss all day about these issues. By the way, we were unable to hit our mute buttons in time as she was reading a quote to us that had one word of profanity. My apologies for that. If anything was broadcast inappropriately, it will not be on the podcast or online archive. Free speech issues, very, very, very major, of great importance. And obviously, you don't like everything that is said. You don't like, obviously, on the airwaves, certain things we're going to block out, but just in media and press, a lot of things we don't like, but it's part of the fabric of our nation, free speech. These days, hey, in England, there was a judge, long-term serving judge, Christian man, who made a comment to other judges in private saying that kids need a mom and a dad, not two moms or two dads. He has been suspended as a result of that. I did say before the show was over that I wanted to speak to you about suffering from a Jewish perspective on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Again, so much more to talk to Deborah about. We were originally going to talk for 20 minutes and ended up going about 40, so I appreciate what she's doing and her passion and getting the truth out about these issues. I want to read a story to you. This was related by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. He is the founder of the Breslov Hasidic sect of Jews. What's unique about this sect is that most Hasidic sects, be it Satmar, be it Lubavitch, be it Babov, that they have had a succession of dynastic leaders, a grand rabbi that has been their dynastic leader. And with Rabbi Nachman, he died, and the sect has gone on now a couple of centuries. So he relates this story, and it's in a book called Garden of the Souls, Rabbi Nachman on Suffering, and it is translated, compiled, edited by Avraham Greenbaum. Once a Jew and a German were traveling as hobos together. The Jew told the German to pretend he was a Jew, since German and Yiddish are fairly similar, and the Jews would have pity on him. Passover was approaching, so he taught him how to act when invited to a Seder. That's the Passover meal. He told them that at every Seder, they make Kiddush over wine, so a blessing is pronounced over the wine. They wash the hands, etc. The only thing he forgot to tell them about was the maror, the bitter herb. There are certain things that are eaten every Passover that are on the Passover plate during the Seder, during the meal. And in that time, so there's bitter herb that's eaten to remind Jews of what we suffered in Egypt. There are different things that each are symbolic. So the German was invited to a house. Being very hungry, he was looking forward to all the fine foods the Jew had described. The first thing they gave him was a piece of celery dipped in salt water. Next, they began to recite the Haggadah. That's the recounting of the Passover, the Exodus story. And he sat there longing for the meal. When the matzah was finally served, the unleavened bread, he was very happy. Then they gave him a piece of horseradish for the bitter herb. It was extremely bitter, and he thought this was the entire meal. He ran out of the house, bitter and hungry, saying to himself, "Cursed Jews! After all that ceremony, that's all they served to eat?" He went to the synagogue and fell asleep. Later on, the Jew arrived happy and full from a good meal. How was your Seder? He asked. The other one told him what had happened. Stupid German, replied the Jew. If you had waited just a little longer, you would have had a fine meal just like me. The same is true, Rabbi Nachman relates, when one wants to come close to God. After all the effort to begin, one is given a little bitterness. This is necessary in order to purify the body. People might think that this bitterness is all there is to serving God, and they run away from it. But if one were to wait a short while and allow the body to be purified, one would feel every joy and delight in the world and one's closeness to God. So there, the point is that hardship and difficulty we go through will have a purifying purpose. But if we run from it rather than let it take us through to its results, we'll think, I was just dealt a bad hand. Everything goes against me, or what a terrible world, or God is against me, or whatever it is, instead of going through the purification and coming out on the other side. Richly blessed here, the rabbi says, by one's relationship with God. There's a famous story told about Rabbi Akiva, one of the most famous rabbis of the Talmud. It relates how once Rabbi Akiva went on a journey. This is also told in the book. He came to a town and asked if anyone could put him up for the night. The inhospitable inhabitants all refused. Still, Rabbi Akiva said, Kol David Rachmana L'tov David. Everything that the merciful one does is for the best. Everything God does is for the best. And he went and spent the night in the field. With him he had a lamp, a rooster to wake him, and a donkey to ride on. But a wind came and blew out the light. A cat came and ate his rooster, and a lion came and ate the donkey. Rabbi Akiva was left alone, all alone in the dark, but still he said, everything God does is for the best. In the middle of the night, a band of marauders came, sacked the town, and took all the inhabitants captive. Then Rabbi Akiva said, now I see how everything the Holy One does is for the best. If my lamp had been a light, they would have seen me. If the rooster had crowed and the donkey had brayed, they would have known where I was and taken me as well. Again, another famous Jewish illustration that things may happen that seem bad, that seem destructive, that seem for the worst, but your attitude is everything God does is for the good, for the best, which means that your attitude and providence, your attitude on whatever happens must be God's will, not things that you bring upon yourself, but things that happen outside of your control. That would be part of traditional Jewish thinking. And hence the mentality of Job in Job 1, the Lord gave and the Lord took away. May the name of the Lord be praised. While I do believe that there are many things in this world that grieve God, that are contrary to his desire, and that much evil is brought on by people, and which many Jews, of course, would accept what I just said there, and that as well there are demonic elements, there is a real devil who's out to destroy. And we see that as well with the narrative in Job, that these sufferings never would have come on Job if not for the provocation of Satan. And yet God superintended it all for his purposes. Yet there is an attitude that be reflected for all believers, followers of Jesus, Romans 8:28, that God works everything for the good, even though things themselves are bad, as we worship him and honor him and serve him, that these things are used for the good and turned for the good, and that which was meant to be a stumbling block by the world or by the devil can become a stepping stone with the Lord. All right, we've extended this offer. We only have one more day, or you can order online through the weekend, and then that's it. A specially priced Messianic Jewish Family Bible. Every time, I have to admit, every time I talk about it, I pick it up, and then I rub my fingers on the cover with the engraved Hebrew and the engraved Tree of Life. It's a beautiful Bible, of course, gold leaf, and of course, specially sewn. It's made to last a lifetime. Best of all, it's a wonderful new translation. It's got beautiful artwork as well. And we've reduced the price to $60, and we're paying the postage. But you only got two more days to call. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or online, AskDrBrown.org, where you can watch a video as well. My bottom line today: our God is not just our Heavenly Father. He is the King of all, and He is to be trusted.